step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I am Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
All right, welcome back to the show. I got another great guest today. This time we're going over to Silicon Valley, San Mateo, California, to talk to Tim Henry. He's the co-founder and CEO of Haul. Haul, I believe, is an on-demand trucking company. He can tell it better than I can, though. So let's bring him up on the air. We'll talk to him. He'll give us a little elevator pitch. We're going to go into this journey and talk about how tech can solve the driver shortage. So let's bring him up. Tim, what's up?
Hey. Thanks for having me.
How are things over there in Silicon Valley? Like right before the pre-show, you were telling me you just got back from a big family road trip.
Yeah.
I know that I think it's Governor Newsom you guys have over there in California. He recently reopened the state. So
yeah.
Little bit of normalcy.
It's weird because we were one of the first states to kind of crack down, and we were kind of locked up in our homes and apartments way before many other people were, and it definitely, you know, I feel like people are like coming out of their homes and, you know, bringing out the masks and finally saying hello and starting enjoying some of the California sun they missed so long.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, when I got vaccinated, like I used to wear the mask. I was good about wearing the mask. And then like as soon as the 2 weeks were up, like that whatever was in psychologically my brain that would like remind me to wear it, it was like completely gone. All like the defenses were taken down. You know, one of the storylines, though, Tim, would be during the pandemic was the death of Silicon Valley. Yet here you are coming back to it just as California reopens. What's the temperature there? Did everyone really move to Austin and Miami?
A lot of people did. You know, I have a lot of friends, former roommates, and just former coworkers who have taken off. They've gone to big towns, you know, like New York, Chicago, just because they were able to kind of maybe get that next role that they were looking for. But a lot of people did leave. That's not to say a lot of founders said, you know what, if this is my moment to relocate part of the business, I'm going to do it. You know, so a lot of people are looking at Miami, you know, like, you know, who would have thought Miami would have been on the startup map, but geez, Lopez, I've been, you know, talking to a lot of founders who are asking me, hey, when are you going to come down here, man? Miami's where it's at. I'm like, I'm not really good in the heat. Like, you know, it's just not for me. But Texas as well. I mean, Austin is booming. You know, I just think anytime as a founder, you can find a good combination of human capital talent, you know, from good, reputable schools, you know, and just kind of good kind of, I don't want to say the term is not cheap, but fair compensations for you to maybe add that additional role that you may be not wanting to spend because it's maybe too expensive in another market. That's kind of how people are looking at it. And then people at the end of the day, if you want happy employees, you want them to be able to afford, you know, maybe an extra room in that apartment or a home one day. And, you know, so I think giving your employees the opportunity to do that, I think is top of mind for a lot of founders right now.
Yeah, I would think, especially when you talk about, you know, millennials, younger people who are just starting families, they need to expand, they need capital to do it. Housing, extremely expensive in all of those areas we just mentioned. So it's awesome to really be able to open up those opportunities, and that the world's largest work at home experiment, which was COVID, it showed that we can do it. We can operate in this world. Your talent is going to be a big theme of this episode, building a startup, finding talent for it. But more importantly, what Haul does, which is matching fleets with drivers to move trucks. Give me a little bit of an elevator pitch on what Haul is.
Yeah, you know, I should have this already. You know, so at its core, you know, Haul is a digital employment platform for CDL drivers. Okay, what does that really mean? You know, we are really matching fleets of all sizes with drivers for assignments of various lengths. So if a driver is looking for a dedicated assignment on a platform, they can find it. If they're looking for more of a short-term, three-month stint at a fleet working, you know, 40 hours a week, they can find it. Or if I'm a driver who, hey, I'm only getting 30 hours at my current job, and I'm looking to just have that a pretty decent paycheck at the end of the week, they can find additional assignments on the Haul platform as well. So I don't like to say we're everything for everyone. We're trying to be everything for one person. That's a CDL driver. But yeah, that's kind of our whole goal of kind of what we're building here. And think kind of some of my past has kind of guided me to kind of building this with my co-founder.
There's a component there too for like the fleet manager too, right? Like I'm looking outside my window. I got all these shipments coming in, but I have trucks parked because just like it's tough to find data engineers, it's tough to find talent, McDonald's workers, like all across the board. It doesn't matter what level you're at. It's hard to find talent right now. Truck driving, there's always been the talk of the driver shortage. And it's one of those controversial subjects that it annoys me. It's like politics because you go driver shortage and someone will yell, there's no such thing as a driver shortage, it's a pay shortage. Well, to me, the definition is if there's not an ass in the truck, you're short a driver. And let's not be pedantic here. Let's try and solve the issue and move forward, right?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I try to be, even though we're dealing with human capital, which tends to be a very political topic, I try to be very, you know, I try to look at it from my Uber days, a very marketplace dynamic problem. It's saying, hey, and kind of what I'm seeing and what my co-founder and I have been seeing, there's an asymmetrical relationship between supply and demand as it relates to labor and trucking. You know, if a fleet has the freight right now, of course they're going to need a driver. But if they don't, they need to somehow not have that driver. You know, like they need to put that driver to work somewhere else. And I think fundamentally what we're trying to get at is that direct hire relationship is kind of a thing of the past, and that we need to start kind of sharing pools of drivers, because if we can really share a pool of drivers, we can maximize the productivity utilization of that labor pool. And I try to not talk like macroeconomics, but if we just kind of take a step back and look at it from a supply and demand issue, that's how we're really looking at it here.
You're a Chicago native. Some may call it the center of the universe for freight, at least the hub of America. I know that there's a few people within freight waves that argue that Chattanooga is. That debate actually happened at Transparency 19.
I saw that.
We lost.
I saw that.
We didn't do well. It didn't help that we did in Chicago, but you have deep freight tech experience. For the past decade, just about, you have been with some of the giants, with Logistical Labs, with Uber that you mentioned, Keep Trucking as an advisor, I think, Delivery. Now you're with Haul, but you mentioned Uber, you mentioned Haul. What is the difference between like an Uber freight and Haul?
So I think a lot of your viewers are pretty educated in kind of freight models. If you kind of ask your aunt, you know, sometimes they, you know, it's a truck, you know, it's like, no, there's fundamentally different models to help, you know, facilitate a shipment. But, you know, Uber freight, under the hood, freight brokerage, they're really looking to take a digital first approach to what people before them have built, Coyote, C.H. Robinson, and they're not alone, you know, Convoy is there as well, is ultimately really looking to lead with technology to optimize the relationship between a shipment and a trucking company, whether it's a one truck, you know, owner operator, or if it's a 50 plus or 500 plus fleet of trucks. So really trying to optimize that relationship. And actually I'm glad you asked this, because during my time at Uber Freight, what I kind of saw is that if we really start optimizing this relationship between the shipper and the trucking company, what that really means is like we're giving the shipper the visibility to say, hey, trucking company 123 is cheaper than trucking company ABC for this month. Move your freight over there. We're giving them the ability to at least price discover and like transition all their volume elsewhere. But what we didn't realize, and you know, when your head's down building that, you don't think about kind of maybe consequences or maybe things that would be affected by this. And it's just not Uber Freight, it's Convoy, any company that's providing supply chain software to shippers to say, hey, you probably should move your shipment to this trucking company, is ultimately what they're doing. They're kind of disrupting the relationship between the fleet and their driver base. Because what that really means, if historically, if I was a trucking company, I would say, awesome, I just landed this year-long RFP with shipper A. Awesome. Recruiting team, go get me X amount of drivers to, you know, to run these lanes. And I'm gonna need maybe 5 drivers each lane. And then I would, you know, I would hire against that need and seat the trucks and be good for that year and hopefully try to renegotiate, keep that same lanes and maybe add another, hire more drivers. But as we see the dynamic, you know, that, you know, essentially more freight being moved between fleets at a more rapid rate. As a fleet owner, I'm like, okay, I needed 50 last month, but I lost that volume because I just lost it to a competitor. I don't need these 5 drivers, or I don't have the motion to like find freight to keep them busy. Because what we saw at least what I saw kind of before Hall and kind of what we're seeing Hall, during Hall, is that drivers are more interested on the assignment. And I want to be careful here, the loyalty between the fleet and the driver is essentially diminished. And what the real loyalty is with earning potential. And the real interest level really lies with the assignment type. So what we're trying to do at Hall is really truly optimize the relationship between the assignments and the driver, and really abstract that relationship between the fleet. Because as we see freight becoming more transactional in nature, we see that the relationship between the fleet and the driver diminishes over time, but there still needs to be some sort of platform to connect a verified, vetted driver with an assignment with that fleet. So we're trying to take, you know, as what we built and what others are building to optimize the relationship between the shipper and carrier, we're trying to do that a level lower, where we're trying to optimize the relationship between the fleet and their and the labor in the truck.
No, that makes a lot of sense and a great explanation, especially in the differentiation of what you're trying to do in that business model. And it might help that you have a little background in Uber. So one thing we do on the show, though, is to get an idea of your lens of the world and how you see it and your perspective. We got to go back in time. So you're 15, 16 years old, yeah, thinking about school, thinking about colleges. What do you do? What were you thinking you're going to be when you grow up?
I was hyper fanatic about baseball. You know, I wanted to play D1 baseball. I was kind of a B grade baseball player, second baseman, center field, and I'll just throw off the mound. And I'm not a tall guy, so it's like, you know, as a kid, you don't realize those limitations. But if you look at any like professional baseball player, they're like 6+, you know, like way heavier and muscular. But I just had this high, you know, I just wanted to be a ball player. I loved it, you know, and I hurt my arm my senior year, and I said, okay, I won't be able to play baseball anymore. I'm going to have to figure out this college thing. And when I got to college, I didn't really know. I knew that I wanted to be in business. I wanted to have a green kind of more environmental orientation to it. But honestly, I just wanted to be someone in my family to go to college, because that wasn't an option for my family early on. So I think that was kind of it's kind of the whole kind of next step for me.
Nice. You just wanted to get there. Now, freight's a world that most people don't, you know, when they're 16, they're not like, oh, I want to go in freight and solve all these problems. In fact, none of us even know how it works, right? Like, you barely know what a truck does. How do you start on this journey? Like, how do you get over to Logistical Labs and end up in this weird place?
When I graduated college, I landed an unpaid internship at a company called Fuda in Chicago. And Fuda, which I forgot my spiel there. Fuda, on-demand catering service. But what I loved about Fuda is, like, it was my first foray into a tech-enabled service type of company. You know, we essentially allowed restaurants who may have been, let's say, in a very non-business center of a city, who may not get that in middle of the day business traffic, we got them in front of large companies like Echo. Funny enough, the founders of Fudo came from Echo, so they just saw this latent capacity between restaurants and buyers, and they kind of essentially were brokering these restaurant foods. So I learned, you know, that Fudo was in a venture office called Lightbank in Chicago, and Echo was right down the hallway, and I was essentially lugging food, you know, over there. And so that's how I first, I would say, got my foot in the door, was with the food tray in my hand into freight. The second thing, I think, you know, people say like freight is big in Chicago. It really is big, in a sense where, you know, when I got out of college, you know, when I didn't have too much money to my name, you take notice who's buying the beers, right? They're like, you're my age, you're buying around for everyone. Like, geez, I wish I can do that. But it was all these Coyote, grads, you know, they just finished their class, you know, they're in their hot pod, and they're just making crazy rippers. And they're like, actually have a commission check to show for it. And they're the ones buying the rounds, probably the cheapest stuff in the place. But that's how I saw, like, oh, freight is like a thing. You can actually have a pretty good career in it. And then, you know, and, you know, that I kind of, long story short, ended up on a buddy's couch, pretty much I didn't have a job. My parents didn't let me move back home, and I had a friend who was working at a brokerage, Load Delivered at that time. Load Delivered has since been acquired. Saying, hey, the founder actually has an idea for a new company. I know you're at Light Bank. You like startup. You like things in startup. You know, in Chicago, this wasn't a vernacular. People didn't have like, oh, you like it was like you like risk taking. So do you want to take a risk here? And that company was Logistical Labs, and Rob and Nathan was an early investor of that. And I spent about 4 years cutting my teeth selling SaaS software into freight brokerages and carriers and asset-based transportation companies. And that's what really kicked off my career in this space. And I was just a young kid. I was just talking to a gentleman earlier today who I was doing the whole hall pitch, and he was like, yeah, Tim, I know you. About 6 years ago, you called me and you landed. I was like, geez, man, I'm so sorry, man. And so I was like, hey, I appreciate you because you helped me get where I am today. So again, it's just, this space is so broad, but also insulated in the sense where, you always make sure you shake the hand who fed you and so that was my story. That's how I got to Freight, Logistical Labs, and then, a few jobs after that, to Uber and forward on.
Well, I thought that one point you just made too, like, because I used to be in freight sales and freight brokerage sales, and sometimes I'm like, man, I wonder if anyone's watching this stuff or listening to this stuff now, and they're like, wait a second, that's that guy who used to like solicit me and spam me and wouldn't leave me alone to sell me some freight brokerage. Sorry.
I really wish he was like, man, Tim, you're on me. He didn't say that, but at least he said, yeah, we closed. You closed me before you left Logistical Labs. I was like, yeah, I did. it was a little bragging.
So how did you get over to Uber? You were there when they were like the hot new thing, at least nationally. I know they were a big deal in like Washington and California beforehand, but mid 2010s, big deal at the time. You were over there. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I got to Uber at a very interesting time. They had just acquired a company called Otto, which was one of the early ADAS companies going after self-driving in the space. And that kind of spun up what became Uber Freight. And, that during that time, it was, it was funny. It was just a whole bunch of, former Chicago brokerage guys and girls in San Francisco complaining about the pizza, trying to build a brokerage. We had a lot of narrative. We had a lot of brand recognition. The one thing people didn't realize is I'm a firm believer, and I'll keep saying this, no idea is a new idea. It's all about timing and execution. What Uber Freight had, and even Convoy, they had a lot of companies before them that did a lot of this mind concept building in people's heads. Like, people knew what Uber was at the time from a rideshare business, and you had companies like Keychain Logistics that no one ever thinks about. They were a YC company essentially selling the concept of Uber for trucking. That happened back in, maybe 2013, 14. Like, so there was a lot of selling to like major shippers. Hey, we're going to be the Uber for trucking. And then by the time Uber got into it, they're like, about time. We've been hearing all these pitches. So how is Uber going to do it differently? So that was great. A lot of people did a lot of selling for a few years before us. And it was more about us to execute on that vision. And really the one thing people didn't realize is we really had to educate internally what Uber Freight really meant. It was very dissimilar from the rideshare business. But that's really kind of how it really started. We were in a warehouse in Harrison in SF, like brokering loads, it wasn't as the machine now. And candidly, I'm still vested in Uber and I really want to see that business unit do well. But it was kind of pretty, I would do it all over again. It was a great time to be building something. The snacks were great, but it was just a lot of great energy, a lot of awesome talent. That's the one thing people, I know there's always these hot debates between, new digital brokerages and this kind of the midsize and established larger brokerages, but man, Uber really breeds some great operational talent. I was really impressed when I was there, and I think everyone was like little things like everyone knows how to do SQL. Like, what does that mean? You're able to query some data out of the database, pivot it around and say, hey, these carriers in this region like are always late. Like being able to see that really quickly and not have to wait for someone to run a report for you, like those little things build up over time and really build a great operational muscle. So I'm really happy what we built there. I've been gone for a few years now, but I'm, you know, they're getting pretty big now. So I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say.
I know Bill Drieger from there, and he. I remember when they hit one of their milestone sales, he promised us he would come on and do some live drumming.
He's rad, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's got a huge digital kit and everything. Bill Drieger's awesome. He's going to be back on What the Truck in a couple of weeks, and it's really cool to get his perspective. It's interesting too. Like that you mentioned that about Uber Freight, because it seems like there's Uber here and there's Uber Freight over here, and like they have the same logo and stuff, yeah. But. Just looking at it from the outside in, you can be like, I can imagine how much of a challenge it would be. It's hard to explain freight to people who aren't from this world. And you in San Francisco are coming from it from a couple ways because, you know, Uber Freight looking to raise money, looking to internally market and get buy-in from the internal teams at Uber. And, you know, when Uber's already a giant with the ride sharing, you're always still a little bit at risk, right? If you're trying to do this like side, I think it was even called Other Bets for a while. Uber right?
Oh, we had no CEO, no COO, no C. We had a CTO, longstanding CTO, but we didn't have anyone, and that was ultimately, you know, I think whether they'll say it publicly or not, like that was a big fear. It's like, hey, we need to prove that this is one a growth center, but also we can pay for ourselves, and I commend Lior and Bill, early days, making sure, hey, we're going to pay for ourselves. We're not going to be just in the red all the time. So we had to prove ourselves early on, and we were able to not only just land the customers, able to operationally show excellence, build a product that, you know, is a feedback loop into landing the customers and bringing on a good mousetrap for carriers. So I think a lot of people, I mean, the fact they're still around. They've been able to raise the money. I think it's a testament to kind of the hard work that not just me, the team effort did those early days.
Yeah, and it's great to see them mature and move into that. You ever read the book Super Pumped?
I have. I've read a few paragraphs from it, but I haven't. It's been referred to me. I'm like really not good at reading, so yeah. I try to say it.
I mean, I'm good if you count like reading tweets and like LinkedIn posts and articles. Then I read like a ton of words, but yeah, in terms of, or like Reddit, I read a lot of that. If that was a book, I'd be like one of the most read people on earth. So you're at Uber, right? You get this great experience working with this great team. You're also seeing the challenges of growing in Silicon Valley. And then meanwhile, you're like, you know what? I think I'll start my own company, Haul. So how does Haul come to be? Or when does this idea come to you?
Well, it wasn't immediate. I think I openly saw that, okay, this is going to be a large brokerage house, and that is a business. It will make money. I had the opportunity to go work at one of the large ones when I graduated, but I loved working when I graduated, there's a reason why I didn't work at Coyote in a sense. That just wasn't a business model I wanted to work at. It's not like it's not profitable that some people would just thrive off of it. It just wasn't me. And I saw, I'm like the sub 100 guy. Like I love like going to marketing meetings, going to sales meetings, like rolling my sleeves, grinding it. Like this is getting established and it's big now. And there's going to be like all these red tapes sooner rather than later. It's like, okay. I can point to something I helped build. I can leave on good terms. So I took off and climbed for about a year and a half. You know, my side life, you know, I would say what I kind of daydream most about when it's not Haul is just rock climbing. You know, it's like we all have something that really fuels us. And I just, you know, being a climber in the United States, there's always a strong relationship to the vagabond life and kind of living on the road. And I wanted to live a little bit of that. So I left in early 2018, and for like about a handful of months, I just went ice climbing, went rock climbing in places around the United States, and I picked up some work along the way. But
I love it because, you know, we're in this phase right now where you see all these Twitter threads about hustle culture and hustle porn and work nonstop and people who try to like shame or chastise you if you do, if you live at all or do anything fun. Meanwhile, you're not only a founder of a company, you've worked at these other great tech, and you're like, you know what? I'm going on like, I know I'm young, I'm going on sabbatical, I'm going ice climbing. What was the best, what was the best spot you went to? And what, did you have some fun?
Yeah. I think, you know, I wouldn't be my mother's son if I wasn't like very thoughtful. It's a very privileged position to be in, to be able to do that. Right. But I do think there is value in, planning your own day, and that, you know, that might seem, might sound weird, but think about it. You know, ever since we were kids, we've had things planned for us, and we haven't ever had true unstructured time in our life. And to sit with that is a very, you know, maybe this is just my personal practice of meditation and such, but there was a reason behind it. And I think just for good mental health, and there's a kind of more than just that, but where did I go? I mean, I try to go everywhere. I think there's two places that come to mind right away. I mean, for anyone who ever wants to get into ice climbing and may not want to be over their head and just like a good family fun, there's a place called Ouray, Colorado. It's they have like a pretty cool, believe it or not, an ice park where they actually farm ice, and people can actually, you know, there's some local guides there. So if you have little ones or just want to take a partner there, you can go, they'll set up a rope for you and just kind of swing and kick into ice. Great therapy as well. You may not, if you don't need to be into meditation, if you just want to get some good anger out on the ice, it's great to kick and swing at. And then the second place I went to, with just kind of the birthplace for alpinism, is Chamonix, France. I was able to just hang out there for, I had a buddy who kind of went through another moment where I just want to, you know, F everything, I'm just going to go dedicate myself to life. So he was in France. He had a small little studio, no frills, bachelor pad, and he let me crash on the floor. So I was just, you know, sleeping on the floor, waking up, drinking a little bit of coffee, seeing if the weather would be good to climb something. But that's another place that stands out to me.
So what led you to Hall during this time off? Is that your thinking space when you take this time away?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's totally what it is. It's like getting away from like a day to day, not to say I wasn't working. Like I was advising companies that like you mentioned earlier. There's a couple of things that I think led, and this is not meant to be a self-help thing, but there's always this kind of, imposter syndrome, not me, that couldn't be me type of relationship people have with big audacious goals in their life. Oh, that's just not me. You know, I got to be part of, you know, some big plays in this space, but I also got to be mentored by major players in this space. Like when I was at Logistical Labs, I remember Jet before he founded P44, right? He, you know, we shared a beer, we shared coffee, very approachable guy. Like, you know, you develop like, oh, he's just like me. You know, I remember Matt from Four Kites. I remember all these people before they started their next thing. And that was important to me. It's like, oh, yeah, I was just at Uber Freight. They're doing well, right? Yeah, like I was part of that, Tim. Like, don't forget that. And then I think advising some companies, I said, when I'm actually telling them how to do, then you kind of you create this kind of framework saying, oh, I can do this, right? You know, so that was a big step for me to kind of separate myself from the day to day, saying, yeah, like if you're ever going to do something, you seem like you know what you're doing, or at least you know the people you can go ask, which for my climbing, you know, my climbing career or hobby or obsession, whatever you want to call it, it's probably one of all of them. I believe in this mentor-mentee relationship, right? If I want to go climb that thing, probably want to go with someone who's climbed it before and can kind of give me some beta, which is kind of techniques of how to get up the wall. And I've been able to surround myself with like, you know, Robbie, formerly of Low Deliver, Capstone, say, Robbie, like, what would you do? And like having those people you can talk to was really important for me. And so having that, I was like, okay, I have the rope, right? I have the rope and I have the protection, right? So now it's all about what do I want to climb? And it came down to kind of the biggest elephant in the room as it relates to trucking was the labor question. Every play out there is running away from labor. They don't want to touch it. They want to be asset light. It's great. You know, it's great for the multiples from the P&L perspective. Like, I get it. But no, you know, but knowing being how I was being very close to a lot of AV trucking plays and still being a firm believer in some particular applications of it, I do think that time horizon is pretty far away. And I think we need multiple solutions to come to market that provide a different employment model for the driver, right? I do think that the drivers are here to stay for a very long time. And I do hope, you know, if we get to a world that there's AV trucks everywhere, I hope people step in, companies and the private sector and the government to step in for reskilling. I think that's totally needed. Like, I'm not a very political guy, but someone needs to step in and kind of think about reskilling of labor. But that, I just want to, it's not happening anytime soon. Like, but you do have to think about that 25, 50 years. What does the world look like? So, but I do think if you really start looking at what the future of trucking looks like, I do think it's a shared pool of labor of trucks within tight markets, sharing trucks, swapping in, swapping out. And I do believe there's applications of AV and like more line haul. But I can tell you like secret, there's a good nearly autonomous form of transportation that moves long haul. It's called intermodal. It's called rail, right? It's there. So
yeah, it's on track. That's what I always say. When people go, like, people are like, what, automated trucks are going to take over the road. I'm like, they haven't even automated the trains yet, and they're on
tracks.
I'm
hip, man. I'm totally hip. So when you, and let me just be clear, like, we should always be swinging for the fences, but let's just, you know, haul is like my big swing in a more pragmatic. It's like me jumping for that big hold with a rope on. It's like, yes, this is needed. Yes, this, you know, the drivers are looking for a different work environment and kind of bringing back to like, why do you have a couple of Uber alumni going after this? And a guy named Tim is when we launched Uber Freight, one of the largest cohorts of app downloads came from the rides business in the Eats business. So these drivers had their CDL who essentially misconfused Uber Freight. They're like, oh, I'm willing to gig in trucking. It's like, no, that's not what Uber Freight is. You need your truck and the authority, you know, yada, yada. It's like, that's where we're like, oh, CDL drivers are running to the gig economy. Why is that? Why are they going there? What is it about? What are the features of these gig platforms, Instacart, Lyft, Uber, you name it, that are attracting professional drivers over there and essentially allowing them that so strong pool that they're leaving money on the table? Because candidly, many of these workers on these platforms are making less than minimum wage if you kind of back out everything. So that, you know, it must be so strong feature sets on these platforms that people are willing to make less when they have a credential, like a CDL license or endorsement where they can be making more. That's the sandbox we're playing in. It's like, okay, we need to, and I put gigify the CDL driver, meaning we need to create some gig-like features in commercial trucking in order for us to, get more drivers and retain the drivers we have. So that's kind of a longabout way of how we got here. And
I have this like ridiculous image in my head of my Taco Nuga Uber Eats order showing up in a semi truck now. I'm the driver just being like, all right, you need a ride to the airport too? It's all combined. It's all one app. But that's a good point. Completely different animals. So you're looking at this, like, I got to start this company. I'm thinking about haul. This is going to be my dawn wall that I have to go and climb. By the way, great documentary. I'm sure you've seen it. Actually, that one gives me agita watching that one. Just like, is that, there's two with the same guy, or he's training the other guy. The one where he climbs like free-handed, and the other one.
Oh, yeah, free solo.
To climb the dawn wall.
Yeah.
Free solo.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was it.
Yeah, I've seen him way too many times.
So this is your dawn wall. You got Hall. Hall's your dawn wall. So how do you build the company? How do you, you're like, great. Everyone has ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen. They don't mean S. So you're like, I got to start this thing. You said you had some cohorts. You had some mentors that really helped you out. So what does day one look like?
You know, so I think one, get a partner in crime. You know, just like in climbing, you need someone who's a belayer for you, right? Who's going to really back me up? You know, I had the protection from Wisdom and the rope of Wisdom, but I need another partner in crime. I think any solo founder out there, God bless you. You are so brave. You know, you are free soloing, right? You're by yourself, right? But I was able to reconnect with a former coworker at Uber Freight, Tuan. And, you know, I caught him at the right time. He was kind of coming up as you know, investing at Uber. You know, things were already big. He was looking for something new. And I, you know, had a cup of coffee with him and said, hey, man, like, I don't think everything's solved in trucking. I think there's something to do in this labor space. That's not AV. You know, let's jam on this. And, you know, a couple of caffeinated sessions at a WeWork, and whiteboard, you think there's all these equations. It was more like scribbles. And, we landed on, okay, like let's really go after this CDL staffing space. That's been kind of a niche service in a humongous industry. Let's start there and let's see where it takes us. So that's kind of how we landed on the idea. There's maybe a few more espresso shots in there that I'm not remembering, but we essentially kind of start kind of the whole pitch, and this was new for me. It's like, how do you ask people for money? That's, it's not like asking for allowance, right? So for us, the one thing I will say that helped us, and you don't get anywhere by yourself, was a really strong alumni network from Uber. We were able to kind of pass our rough deck around, and it caught some attention. I think the founding team caught people's eyes, like, oh, okay, like, these people are new. This is interesting. I haven't seen this before. And it kind of snowballed there. We got someone to capitalize for our pre-seed round. And the funny thing is, and maybe this is a whole show of its own, is, we received the last funds from our pre-seed the first week of March of last year, and we launched the second week of March of last year. So,
a great timing.
Perfect, But that's kind of the story. We founded the company early last year. We're COVID native in a sense where we had to go virtual. We're kind of one of the weird companies that are trying to come back into person the next few months, because I think it's important for culture. But we knew fundamentally, in order to kind of create an experience where a fleet can request a driver for an assignment, we've all played around with different apps to do our own work or to order that late night burrito. We kind of have a mental model of like what those feature sets will look like. So we were like, okay, we need a fleet portal. We need some place where a fleet logs into to request a driver. We need a driver experience where a driver can find us, qualify for haul, and actually match, assignment discover. And then like any marketplace that's managed, you need a back-end tool. You need ops tools to manage this transaction. So, we got through last year and brought on some large reputable fleets on the large side, some great mid-sized fleets, and some great small fleets that by all means are, some of our highest power users on the platform. So we got through last year, just wrapped up our proper Series seed earlier this year. And, we're just so grateful that we've been able to really add value both, to our major customers, the drivers, but also provide additional value to fleets, right? At the end of the day, any business needs to be adding value in the transaction. So that's what we've been able to do.
So new founder, COVID native, Freightwaves, we were raising money in January, February of 2020.
Lots of no's.
It was not a good time.
Lots of no's.
It was so many no's.
It's scary.
I'm not going to lie, it got a little scary at first, because startups, there's no rules. Everything's written in invisible ink and on whiteboards, and plans can change minutes after they're just said. You have to constantly pivot. And especially newer startups, you really got to keep an eye on your founder, right? You got to understand their pulse. You got to understand where they're going. You have to sometimes be one step ahead of them just so you can help read their mind. Because a lot of times, the big difference between that and legacy companies is, I was talking to Thomas Healy from Hylion last week, Austin company, by the way. He was talking about how the changes, like initially they wanted to put their battery on the trailers, on truck trailers. And obviously they realized that's a terrible idea because of the way trailer positioning works. And we probably wouldn't be having that conversation had Hylion done that. So my question to you is, so you make these assumptions, you start this company, and it's a scary time. You can't do interviews easily. You can't bring in talent easily. So how do you build the company?
I'm still trying to figure that out. To anyone who's like saying, oh yeah, perfect, he's got it, they're all lying. For me, ultimately, you just need to have a really tight feedback loop, like really keep learning really fast. And for us, really initially, is we kind of prioritize our hires really easily. It's like Tuan and I, we can roll up our sleeves and get crap done. I don't know if I can say shit, get shit done. We're operators, even though Tuan can kind of bust out code, like he can smile and dial like the best of us and really just grind through. So Tuan and I knew, okay, we had this cash in the bank. We can take on some of the operational need, but we need a couple of things. We need someone who kind of understands the space, who can bring in some initial customers. We knew we couldn't explain CDL staffing to anyone. So we needed to bring on some existing users. And the one thing around COVID, we decided March, April, May of last year not to go out to sell, because I think it would just be really inappropriate. Like, people are trying to figure out what COVID meant for their own lives, let alone their work. And I just thought it would be a little bit tone deaf, like, hey, have you heard of Hall? Like, it's just like, you know, don't do that. And for me, I was just trying to figure out, what does this mean for me? You know, so there's a kind of, I think, like, let's take a deep breath. Let's just focus on product that's in our control. We know we have some good product chops where we know what we can build roughly to kind of get a transaction going on the platform. You know, we are able to bring on an industry veteran from a competitor, and we just gave him a really quick edict, like, go get me a user of staff drivers, right? Like, we can't play games educating right now. People, you know, I'm a very visual person. I felt people were very, like, close-fisted. Like, just, I'm only talking to myself, my family, my closest advisors in my company, right? And trying to break through that fist wouldn't work, right? So that's where you have to go from a trusted advisor saying, hey, like, they're not so bad. Like, you know, you trust me, trust them. It's just kind of this business culture that I just saw from afar. It's like, if I was them, what would I feel like, right? I think the strongest thing that any founder should have, whether they're, it's empathy. You have to be empathetic. Like, why is that customer saying no? Come on, you got to get it. Like, they're on the chopping block. The last thing you want to do is take a risk. Or it's like, why is this, you know, personnel? Like, you have to be empathetic. You got to be able to put yourself in their shoes. But yeah, I mean, long story short, we're able to bring on some cohort of first customers, really prove out. And the one thing that we didn't realize, it's all hindsight's 2020, was, you know, in April, May, June, probably had the largest layoffs in trucking, right? So we had a lot of not only CDL driver talent hit the market, but all just a lot of other talent hit the market as well. So we were able to get a massive swath of drivers' interest on our platform, because a lot of drivers were looking for that assignment. So that's kind of early supply we're able to take advantage of. Early days, we're like, holy crap, what we're going to do. But that's just how it kind of worked out in our favor looking back. And, you know, now we have thousands of drivers with accounts on Haul, where we're, you know, in markets where we're active. And I would say last year, I think, we were given the license to fail. If you're able to get through last year, you know, everyone expected the worst. And being back to your point, when investors and, you know, when you're out there raising, they're going to back their current portfolio. So if it's not a new investor, they're going to say, sorry, I don't have time for you. I got to make sure I bridge my current investments. Like, all the money I have, I have to give to them. I'm sorry. I love you guys. Yeah, I love your show, but that's just that. I mean, you have to think about it in their world.
It's follow the leader, right? It's very trendy. It's very follow the leader. These people, they meet over a few shots of espresso, these VCs, and, you know, one of them says, hey, I'm back in the freight market. I'm back putting, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Then they get back in, but then that same guy, he comes in 3 weeks later and he goes, you know what? You gotta cool down. There goes the money. Meanwhile, you're sitting there like, God damn, I'm trying to build this company. But you know what? You're smart. You pick that mentality that we have this runway. We have the runway. We're not trying to take the plane off the ground. Because especially in the beginning, it's such a mental game. I know there's finances and money behind it, but so much of it is just like that mental perseverance of being like, yeah, there's this unknown. There's all of these things that can go wrong, and to not focus on them.
Life is unknown. Life is unknown, right? You know, so it's, if you kind of keep that mentality of like, just make sure the basics are covered. You have enough cash for a long enough runway, right? You're doing the, you know, you're prioritizing what matters. That's all you can control, right? You can't control anything else.
So what mistakes have you made so far? Is there anything that, like, you made an assumption going into it? You're like, it's going to be this way. And then you're like, it's not at all, but you know what? This is the way.
Yeah. There's two things. One, just from my own being, you know, first time founder, trying to get better. I got to interview better. You know, it's just like those first, you know, I give everyone benefit of doubt. Maybe that empathetic muscle is a little too strong. I need for me real time as we're hiring, that's a plug, Hall is hiring. Sorry. You know, so, you know, I need to become a better interviewer. I think especially I'm, even though I can't see your body language here. And so in this virtual world, I can't read what you're doing with your foot, right? I can't read what you're doing, you know, with other things, right? So I kind of read people's, you know.
Hey, in this virtual world, I don't have to wear shoes.
I love it, man. Hold on. I'm right there with you.
But
you know what I mean? Like, hey, but I would, you know, but if we were together not wearing shoes in a room interviewing, how relaxed would it be, right? So the interviewing in a virtual world is tough for me. I got it wrong a couple of times. And that's another thing is you don't realize how much time you lose from a bad hire. It's always, you know, it's always easy to hire hard to fire in a sense where if you just, it's just not like software or like controls, like delete, like you're retaining this bad culture, behavior, bad process you inherited. So that's the one thing for me as a founder is trying to get those hires right. It's not going to be 100%. So I'm never one for like anything to be perfect, but for me, that's one thing that stands out. I think another thing, just it's hard to move fast sometimes. I'm used to when you have all the resources in the world at Uber, you move fucking fast, like fast, fast, fast. You can have a decision affect thousands of people, things, or places like overnight. I miss that. You know, that's the one thing I do miss from working at a larger org is being able just to like, have massive change. Maybe that's a better word, massive change. I'm still in my little bubble, in my little markets where I'm active today. So because the reason why I like that is because you can have a large enough sample size to actually understand what's going on. Here, we have our own marketplace. It's smaller. It's definitely not statistically significant. You know, so if a statistician looks at it, it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything to him, right? But if you have like millions of people doing a certain behavior, you can start modeling out maybe if that incentive worked or that feature worked. And so I really do miss that, the scale. But yeah, I mean, those are the two things I would say.
Now, a lot of your mindset tends to come through the parallels that you make with climbing. It's this deep passion of yours. You're in freight, and you've talked about the safety net, and that is the mentors and the co-founder. And I know that you have some experience as a mentor with Plug and Play that you did for a few years. I know that when I teach and when I help people, I tend to learn, change, and reinforce ideas and beliefs I had. Sometimes I dread doing it because it's time consuming, but I love doing it because it alters, you come out differently. Like you think you're there, I'm going to teach this class, I'm going to teach this person, but ultimately you're also teaching yourself if you're doing it right. So tell me a little bit about your mentoring experience.
Yeah, you know, I think, with Plug and Play and even like, still, even as I'm no, you know, I don't do that formally anymore, is it allows you to kind of like kind of test some biases, like the whole why, you know, like why would you do it that way? So, you know, most of the times when you feel like you have all the swagger, you know how things should be, you'd be like, never going to work. But then like some of these companies, I'm like, yeah, I guess if I like squeeze my eye, if I kind of like look at it right, like maybe I need to just turn my head the other way, like, yeah, that could work. And ultimately what I can do is just say what didn't work for me, and let that founder or that company really run with it. Because that's what you should do as an advisor is definitely advise on like strategic questions, but it's every advisor I've always worked with or when I advised, it's always about like what you shouldn't do, because the whole idea is to help them not waste time and be more efficient with their time. So if I can keep them from wasting 30 days on something, that's just think about all the salaries, right? Just think about all, just if you kind of model that out, like the salaries, time saving, and even like maybe just like debt operationally a product they would take on, like that's significant. And that's really where kind of the advisory work I've done really came. But at the end of the day, it only matters if they accept it. So you're a sounding board. You can tell them the best you can, and you hope they kind of do with it. You try to give them the paint to paint with, but you don't give them the numbers to paint with. It's up to them. You know, they're going to paint whatever they want to paint. So that's kind of been my work, and it's been cool from Plug and Play, like how they found themselves really good, kind of a corporate innovation partner. And they have, through that, they create a great mousetrap for deal flow. I think they're like one of the number one, like investors in supply chain, or one of the number active investors in like VC land people don't realize. So they've created a really good, you know, it benefits everyone. It benefits them. It benefits corporation. It benefits startups. So, you know, kudos to them. And yeah, it's been really fun. I got to, you know, even now I still have some great partnerships I've formed just being, you know, drinking a cup of coffee with a founder or a corporate partner that, you know, I've been able to, it wouldn't have happened if I didn't mentor. So when you give it up, when you give it forward, you're always going to get it back and, you know, some good karma.
I mean, it clearly sounds like something you would recommend getting involved with. So people who want to be mentors or get mentored, how do they get involved with something like Plug and Play? It sounds like it's been very valuable and very formative to you.
Yeah, I think they have a pretty, you know, structured process. I think if you go to their website, oh gosh, I should know this. If you go to their website, they have like a sign up page, and they do have, if you're like a tech founder, they'll definitely love to have you involved. If you're a startup really trying to get in front of some companies, some strategic investors, partners, they have a formal process. You sign up and, you know, you actually go through kind of a selection committee. And yeah, it's kind of do the pitch, you know, we all have to pitch somewhere.
So you are helping other companies put asses in seats, put asses in trucks. Hiring market's tough. Thomas Healy was on here last week. He's like, hey, we got a bunch of jobs open in Austin. You want to come and work and change the world via EVs? You can come to us. FreightWaves right here. We have 37 jobs open and more being added to our own job board. You want to come to Chattanooga, hang out with me? You can come down here. You guys, I imagine, are hiring too. You're growing. You mentioned, so we're back to the beginning here. You had that big road trip. You get back to Silicon Valley. You're sitting there. It's right now. It's 2021. You've got to move forward. What is the plan going forward? And do you think you're going to have any trouble finding talent to help that build out?
You know, I hope not. You know, you always kind of, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst. You know, I think ultimately that's why we build. You only have two options. You have someone doing the task or you have a machine doing the task. Like, I don't want to have to build all the code, right? You know, so, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, I want people, because I think, you know, what we're building, similar to what Uber built and Lyft, there's thousands of people that support it, right? Do I want to employ thousands of people? Probably not, man. Like, it's a lot of people to manage. But,
to think about.
You know, like, so many things, you know, like, is there enough toilet paper in the bathrooms? Is there enough, you know, that just seems like a nightmare. Maybe that's why you get the COO. But, you know, I think for us, so what we're planning and doing, kind of a hiring plans, you know, we right now have been active in markets in California and Texas. You know, we've been, you know, actually constraining ourselves to these two regions, really just trying to make sure we're getting the right product, we're learning kind of the right driver experience on a platform, the right fleet experience, the right operational tooling we need to manage. You know, I think our goal is to, land and expand like any other platform. So, you know, we want to be in more markets in Texas. You know, we're currently in DFW, San Antonio, Houston, sound awesome. Georgia, we want to be in Atlanta and Savannah, you know, just obvious freight markets. You know, I think we have some great proof points. We, you know, maybe go out for another formal raise and make sure we're good. You know, we can show that we're good stewards with capital and we can put it to work in an efficient way and then go, you know, by this time next year, I would love to say we're in, you know, most regions, active in most regions in the United States. And we have core operation teams built out. Hiring. Yeah. I mean, I'm after this, I have interviews. So, you know, I think, it's just, there's no secret sauce, you know, get in front of as many candidates as you can, leverage internal referral programs and, you know, and see if you can get that right talent that you need for the right position.
Now, I've interviewed hundreds of people in this job. I've talked to tons and tons of CEOs, and I've talked to founder CEOs, and I've talked to hired CEOs. And no offense to the hired CEOs, but I tend to relate more to the founder ones because they tend to be, even though they're business focused, they tend to be like the more free-spirited, free-thinking, artistic side of the world. And they're also the kind of guys who, like you said, by 1,000 employees, I kind of want to be out the door. You know, I like the idea. I like the process of building it. I like the chase. And then, so, you know, you go public and it's a thing. And then it's like a job, right?
There's creativity in building business. I mean, I never thought I would be, you know, the CEO of a company. I knew that, you know, even as a kid, I loved tinkering and building. You know, I would get that Lego set and not read the instructions and just have fun with it. I would break apart radios. I was just, you know, and didn't know how to put it back together, but that wasn't the point. I just liked tinkering. You know, I thought I was going to go to school. You mentioned schooling. I actually, you know, when I think about it, I really wanted to like design technical gear, like kind of clothing, like, you know, work for Patagonia or North Face. And just because I love designing and love, my brother's an artist, you know, and, you know, a long line of artists. And, you know, what I didn't have from a technical paintbrush or graphic design, I feel like I have in building experiences. And the way I do that is building a business that allows me to create these experiences for people working with all, or what I did before. You know, you're creating an experience, you know, and it's just a byproduct that it creates a transaction and a value afterwards. But I think of building, and to your point, a lot of CEOs are, you know, they have tons of hobbies, you know, like you mentioned, Bill plays the drums, you know, everyone has a very creative, I've met typically has a very creative outlet, whether it's just listening to music and just chilling out, or a lot of them are like psychopaths and they love like extreme sports. So there's definitely cohorts. I'm definitely more of like in the between. I do love the creative side. I do like testing myself mentally through my climbing, but I'm not the person who's going to like go summit Everest. It seems too damn cold. And you know, there's just actually no climbing on it. You're just kind of like,
there's people who die because it's too congested, you know, like for, no yeah. way. Forget it. Forget that. That's not,
I like all my fingers.
So people who want, they want the experience. They want to, CDL drivers, they want to get involved with Hall fleets. They want to get involved with Hall people who want to join the company you're hiring.
Yeah.
They want to get involved with Hall. Is it hallwith.us?
That's right. Hallwith.us. That's the landing page. You can read a little bit about us. I mean, you know, FreightWaves has been really fortunate to, you know, highlight us in a few articles. So if you just Google Hall FreightWaves, you probably see a couple of articles with us. So yeah, you know, that's how you get a hold of us. You know, I don't do many of these very often, but you know, as mainly I don't like talking, I like doing, and I this has been a really cool opportunity for me to share a little bit about myself and what we're building. And but yeah, that's how people can get a hold of me. And I'm not really active on social media. So yeah, don't try to look for me there. But LinkedIn, I am. LinkedIn is becoming social media now. You know, they have a
go to his website, and if you click on the, if you need him, his DM is like click on the chat button, and his face pops up, and he's like, hey, do you need any help? That's one way you can reach him. We got about a minute here before I let you go. All right, random question: worst experience you've ever had with a vending machine?
Oh gosh, oh man. I mean, if my partner Aaron will tell you, my biggest cravings is Flamin' Hot Cheetos. And I think there was a time where, you know, I put in one 25-cent bag, got stuck, and I was like, oh, put in another one, another bag got stuck. For some reason that comes to mind, a 2-bag getting stuck. It was the worst day ever. Never recovered from it.
It's like walking away from like the slot machine. Right? You're like, someone, some jerk is going to come by and get 3 bags now for all this money I put in there.
And then
you just got to kiss it up to God, right? You got to move on with your life. Hey, it's been a pleasure, Tim. Yeah. Glad you joined me on the show today.
It took an
hour to sit with me.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting us inside your world. Everyone out there in the audience, thank you for coming into our world today, too. You want to come down to Chattanooga, November 8th to 10th, in-person events are back. F3 Festival Freight happening right here, live.freightwaves.com. Click on F3, get tickets. You want to find the show, audio only, podcast players everywhere. Look up FreightWaves Insiders. You want to watch our beautiful mugs talking to one another, you can download FreightWaves TV app. Go to tv.freightwaves.com. Watch us on demand. Thank you so much. I'm on social. Find me on Twitter @TimothyDooner. That's DOONER. Take care. God bless.